While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the Radio News Analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On the Radio News Analysis, right here on your number one talk radio station, that is Eagle FM. I am your host, Dafa Happy Juju, and today is Monday, the 30th of March, 2026. Now, this afternoon, we once again turn our attention to the key developments shaping Namibia's national conversation, from economic trends and governance to innovation, business and youth empowerment. Now, these are not merely headlines, they are the driving forces influencing policy direction, economic opportunity and the everyday realities of Namibians across the country. Now, on the Radio News Analysis is more than a news update. It is a platform for in-depth analysis and informed decisions. Here, we go beyond reporting events. We examine the underlying factors, unpack the data and decisions shaping developments, and explore what they actually mean for Namibia's future. Now, over the next 1 hour and 30 minutes, we'll break down the major stories of the day, engage with diverse perspectives, and connect the dots between policy, economics, and society. Now, whether it's shifts in the economy, new government initiatives, or emerging opportunities for young people, our aim is to provide clarity, context, and insight that empowers you as a listener. Now, in an increasingly fast-paced and information-rich world, understanding context is just as important as knowing the facts. That is why On the Radio News Analysis remains committed to delivering credible information, balanced analysis, and meaningful conversations that keep you informed, aware, and well-prepared, so that nothing actually comes to you by surprise. Now, wherever you are tuning in from this afternoon, from the coasts of Sakumun, Valvers Bay, or perhaps from Ochuwarongo, Okahanja, Tumeb, Ruritz, the huts of Ongodiva, Oshakati, Enana, Rundu, anywhere you're finding yourself at this afternoon, thank you so much for making time to be with us right here on the Reading News Analysis, because right here, On the Reading News Analysis is not just about reporting the news, but about helping you understand it. Now, let's get right into today's conversation. Now, the Ministry of Industries, Mines and Energy has announced a fuel price increase for April 2026 on Friday, following a sharp increase or sharp rise in global oil prices and a weakening Namibian dollar, so they cited. Now, according to the ministry, international oil prices surged in March 2026, largely driven by escalating geopolitical tensions in the Middle East, particularly involving the United States, Israel, and Iran. Now, these tensions have heightened uncertainty in global energy markets, as we've come to learn, increasing risk premiums and pushing up the cost of crude oil as well as refined petroleum products. Now, concerns over potential supply disruptions, especially along critical shipping routes such as the Strait of Hormuz, have also contributed to higher flight and insurance costs. Now, during the review period from the 1st to the 23rd of March 2026, the average price of petrol 95 rose significantly to $124.92 per barrel, marking a 56.9% increase compared to February's average of $79.60 per barrel. Now, diesel prices recorded even steeper increases, with diesel 50 ppm averaging $197.53 per barrel and diesel 10 ppm at $197.90 per barrel, both reflecting increases of over 122% from their respective February averages. Now, that's a a terrible increase. Now, the situation was further compounded by the depreciation of the Namibian dollar against the US dollar, as you have seen recently, something we covered here, right here on the Reading News Analysis. Now, the average exchange rate during the review period weakened to 16.62 Namibian dollars per USD, representing a 3.9% decline from the February average of 16 Namibian dollars. Now, this has made the importation of fuel more expensive for Namibia, which relies entirely on imported refined petroleum products. Now, in response to this development, the ministry has approved an increase in fuel pump prices effective the 1st of April 2026. Petrol prices will rise by $2.50 per liter, while both diesel grades will increase by $4 per liter. Now, as a result, fuel prices in Walvis Bay will be set at $22.08 per liter for petrol and $23.63 per liter for diesel 50 ppm and $23.73 per liter for diesel 10 ppm. Now, prices in other parts of the country will be adjusted accordingly, according to the Ministry of Mines and Energy. Now, to help cushion consumers from the full impact of this increases, the cabinet of the 8th administration has approved a temporary 50% reduction in fuel levies for a period of 3 months from April to June 2026. And I think we can only hope and pray that after 3 months, this remains, perhaps I would say that we go back to normal. Otherwise, I have no idea. Now, this intervention aims to provide relief amid ongoing price volatility in global oil markets. Despite this measure, though, the National Energy Fund will absorb an estimated under-recovery of approximately 500 million Namibian dollars. Now, the ministry emphasized that Namibia's dependency on imported fuel makes it particularly vulnerable to global market fluctuations. And that is the key of it all. The underlying sentence that the ministry emphasized, that Namibia's dependency on imported fuel makes it particularly vulnerable to global market fluctuations. Now, we're going to get into discussion with economists furthermore on this one. But for now, let's take a listen to the Minister of Mines and Energy, that is Minister Modestus Amutse, was speaking at the Government Information Sharing Center on Friday to give us this update. Now, then afterwards, we will come in and discuss this further with economists and get an understanding of what this actually means, and perhaps also ponder on what Namibia can prepare itself for in future or should be working on, who perhaps it can be partnering up in terms of fuel prices so that we don't have to feel all the shocks of that come as a result of global tensions. Of course, other countries are feeling it, but sometimes if we take necessary steps ahead, we might not feel it as hard as it's coming now. Even though the minister did say we should not panic, we have enough fuel supply. Now, nonetheless, let's take a listen to Minister Modestus Amutse.
This media conference has been convened to provide a timely and transparent update to the Namibian nation on the current status of supply in light of the ongoing geopolitical tensions in the Middle East, and to outline the key factors influencing supply as well as the measures being implemented to safeguard continuity, protect the interest of all Namibians, and maintain stability in our economy. In an increasingly uncertain global environment marked by geopolitical tensions and disruptions in international supply chains, it is imperative that we continuously assess and strengthen our national resilience. The government of the Republic of Namibia remains fully committed to ensuring a stable, reliable and secure supply of essential resources while proactively addressing emerging risks. I wish to highlight that the role of the government is to ensure the security, stability, and affordability of fuel supply in the country. It regulates fuel prices, monitors international developments, and works closely with the four major oil marketing companies to oversee import schedules, storage levels, and the overall reliability of the supply system. This mandate is provided for under the Petroleum Products Energy Act of 1990, which empowers the minister to regulate fuel prices and ensure orderly supply in the national interest. In view of the economic situation, the Namibian government has also been and continues to provide strategic guidance and coordination to address emerging risks from the global geopolitical tensions, ensuring that our country remains resilient against potential disruptions. Namibia is a net importer of petroleum products with no operational oil refineries. Our annual consumption is roughly between 1.1 billion liters, of which 70% is diesel and 30% petrol, equating to approximately 100 million liters of petrol and diesel consumed monthly. Prices of petrol and diesel are regulated by the government, while jet fuel, paraffin, and heavy fuel oil are not regulated. There are four major oil marketing companies that we now have that are responsible for importing petroleum products and participating in the slate account administered by the National Energy Fund. And these companies are NAMCOR, Puma Energy Namibia, Vivo Energy Namibia, and Total Energies Namibia. Based on the submissions received from the suppliers, the following observations are made: that the country currently holds adequate stock levels of petrol and diesel to meet national demand over 1 month to 2 months. Global oil prices remain sensitive to developments in the Middle East, particularly shipping routes and production volumes, which could influence domestic prices, though not physically availability. At this stage, there are no supply disruptions affecting Namibia. The risk we are managing is primarily price related, not availability related. In practical terms, Namibia's fuel supply system is supported by a combination of well-coordinated measures, including established import arrangements through the port of Walvis Bay, robust storage infrastructure such as the National Oil Storage Facility, and facilities operated by the respective fuel suppliers, strategic stockpiling, and regular import scheduling, close coordination with the oil suppliers, and diversified sourcing from international oil markets. These combined measures ensure a stable and reliable supply of fuel for the country, even during periods of global market uncertainty. The ministry has taken note of reports of panic buying by some consumers, but wish to emphasize that there is no need for concern at the moment. Namibia's fuel stocks remain adequate. We urge all Namibians to continue purchasing fuel as needed and to avoid unnecessary hoarding of fuel. Furthermore, petroleum products are classified as hazardous substances, and storing them requires compliance with safety, environmental, and fire protection standards. So the public is therefore advised not to store fuel in excessive quantities or unsafe conditions, as this possesses serious risk, and it's indeed unnecessary at the moment. Additionally, the resale of petrol or diesel without a license is illegal. Under the Petroleum Products and Energy Act of 1990, only authorized and licensed entities may sell fuel to the public, and buying or selling fuel through informal channels is strongly discouraged due to the legal and safety risks involved. I emphasize once again, at this stage, Namibia's supply system remains stable. The key transmission channel we are observing is through international oil prices rather than physical supply constraints. Members of the media, I mentioned the National Energy Fund when I spoke of the suppliers of oil. Allow me to briefly elaborate on its role. The National Energy Fund is mandated to equalize fuel prices through the cumulative slate account. This mechanism compensates oil marketing companies for losses incurred when the import cost of fuel exceeds the regulated pump price, and conversely recovers gains when costs are lower. The objective is to smooth price volatility and ensure stability in domestic fuel prices. During this difficult period, therefore, the government, as part of its efforts to mitigate the fuel price shock in the economy, has resolved to temporarily reduce fuel levies within the fuel price structure by 50%. And in addition, the fund will continue to stabilize fuel price volatility for at least the next 3 months. While part of the under-recoveries expected in April 2026 will be absorbed by the National Energy Fund, amounting to approximately 500 million per month. That is what the government, through the National Energy Fund, would spend on behalf of the public, just not to transfer the whole cost of fuel at the pump to the public. In closing, let me reiterate that the government of the Republic of Namibia remains committed to ensuring a secure, stable, and affordable supply of fuel for all Namibians. The current fuel pricing system continues to function as intended, balancing international market realities with the need to protect Namibian consumers from excessive volatility. We will continue to monitor developments in the global oil markets and implement all necessary measures to safeguard our national energy security. I urge all Namibians to remain calm, purchase fuel responsibly, and trust that your government is taking proactive steps to protect the interest of every citizen. Together, we can navigate these challenging times and maintain the stability that underpins our nation's growth and prosperity.
And now joining us telephonically in studio is Gabriel Nyinominavari Erastus. A very good afternoon to you, Gabriel, and welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Yes, good afternoon to you, Nafa.
Mm. Now, Gabriel, of course, we're talking about the ministry announcing fuel prices to increase and also reassuring the public that we have enough fuel supply for the next 2 to 3 months. Now, of course, despite those, they also say that the National Energy Fund will absorb an estimated under-recovery of approximately $500 million. Now, for you being an economist, I want you to explain to us what the subsidized $500 million from the government to cushion consumers actually mean.
Like, if you look at the under-recovery is the difference between international oil prices and domestic pump price. So what you do is that for those who import fuel, whenever they come and sell it inside, it must make sense, meaning that it should make financial sense. But when the prices now domestically are very low compared to outside, is what now we call an under-recovery, the difference between the two.
Mm-hmm.
So the system that we have in place is where now, whenever there is an under-recovery or price difference domestically and outside, what we do is that we adjust the prices. We adjust the domestic prices to meet or to be at the level where it make it financial possible for those who are importing fuel. Now it works like this. When now the gap or the difference is so huge, like we are it has been predicted for April, 600 cents, 1,200 cents and things like that. The gap is now too big. And when the gap is too big, it means the government cannot just shift the price increase to the consumers. It will not be possible.
Mm-hmm.
We have decided to increase to $2 for petrol and $4 for petrol. That's a really, really, really a big and sharp increase.
Yes, it is.
And that was not actually the price difference. That is just now a portion of it. So what government did is that instead of increasing with the full amount that is between the international and the domestic market, they reduced it and they only increased with $2 for petrol and $4 for diesel. Then the remaining gap is now what the government is going to subsidize. And that subsidy is now what cushion or protect from the consumers taking the whole burden of price increase. It could have been $6 or $7 or $8, but government did not reduce with that full amount.
Yeah.
With that full amount, they only now decided to increase with the $2 and the $4, and they would take up now the other difference. They will cover the other difference, meaning they have to pay the industrial players the difference. That is what we mean cushioning, meaning that you do, instead of the fuel pump price increasing with $8 or something like that, the government will take the other part, pay the industrial player, while the consumers, householders, and all those who own transport company vehicles, they only get to pay this amount. So that is what we mean by cushion. However, it's only for April.
Exactly.
And we do not now know how things are going to move in the Middle East. So it means it is somehow a short-term type of police intervention, even though the other 50% reduction in levies for 3 months is somehow more proactive. However, now, this is just the first shock. We do not know how things will translate. So it means a government has to find another policy intervention. And that policy intervention now has to be very carefully planned, because they will not be able to afford the $500 million every month.
Yeah.
It's just impractical at the government level. Yeah, in a short term, yes, but in terms of going forward, you cannot be spending $500 million every month to pay importers of fuel. Mm-hmm. It just it's not commercial viable for the government, which is actually continuously borrowing.
Yeah.
That is just now the danger of that policy. It's a very good intervention because it's not only our own Namibian government which is doing it. Almost every government out there, they are finding ways to reduce their energy bill just because of that war.
Indeed. Now, of course, in terms of this $500 million from the government, obviously it's going to come from the government's coffers. But then as an economist, what analysis can you derive to see where perhaps would they get this $500 million? Is it probably from under recoveries from the Slate account? They should have, maybe there's such an amount of money that had been accumulating as they have been calculating the differences between under recoveries and over recoveries. What analysis are you actually making?
Yeah, look, we under the National Energy Fund, we keep saving whenever there is an over recovery. Yeah, we keep saving, we keep taking from the levy. But unfortunately, the fact is that we, due to transparency issues, we always have transparency issues in our country. We do not know how much is in that fund. So we do not know. So that creates a lot of now uncertainty at this particular juncture, because the under recoveries that are being recorded now in terms of fuel prices are not the usual one. So you cannot be comfortable that we have a fund, because that fund usually covered 20 cent recovery, 10 cent recovery, 15 cent. It has never covered such a huge under recovery, such a price difference in over a long time. And you to take out or to cover up like half a billion, that is a lot of money going out of that fund.
Mm-hmm.
And remember that fund also cover a lot of things. It cover a lot of things, not all of that. So what actually mostly matter here is that how much is going out in one particular month and how significant it is and how much do we have before we made this move. But now due to the fact that we do not know, because if you Google around, you not see the financials, so you not see how much is in that fund. So that now make it even more difficult for us to give analysis or for us to be able to provide some suggestions and things like that, because we do not know how much is in that fund.
Yeah.
That is now unfortunately the issue. But one of the most important things to acknowledge is that at least that these things are moving while at the beginning of our budget announcement.
Mm.
So we are able to maneuver around perhaps. So I'm sure conversations are happening within the government entities that how do we perhaps say for the Minister of Defense, unfortunately, we promise you in the appropriation fund this amount, but we have to start shifting things. So that is the only thing that give us one of the advantage that we just started with our distributing our budget. It's we have not even started yet. We are probably starting on Wednesday to release the money, because the financials will start. Yeah. Even until now, the Minister of Finance has not released its borrowing plan. How much is it going to borrow? So that is actually the most beautiful luck, how lucky we are that we are at the beginning of our planning of the financial year. So we should be able to increase the amount that we plan to borrow or shifting money from ministry to ministry, just to make sure that we put it where it's relevant so that we can cushion our economy. Because for us, we cannot afford to say, guys, do not drive. We are importing country. Most of the thing that we use, we import. We have most of the thing that we eat, we are importing. Unlike other countries, like when Malaysia, Thailand, and others are saying, colleagues, government employees, only those one that are important should go to work. You see, the countries are making such changes because depending on their economic structures and what they produce inside. Us here, we cannot say the trucks must not travel during the day because you import. Otherwise, you're going to end up with shops not having food because we import everything. So we really, really have to find a way for us to get fuel at whatever price we have to pay, because an importing country.
Okay.
And also, we also have to leverage our relationship with Iran. we were reading that, okay, one of South African tankers was allowed to pass through the Strait of Hormuz. Mm-hmm. The Indians and the Pakistan and the others, ships or tankers are passing through because they have a good relationship with Iran. So we also have to start leveraging such type of things, because most of our fuel is coming from Qatar, it's coming from Bahrain, it's coming from UAE. It used to come from Indonesia, but Indonesia also buy from Qatar and others to qualify. So it's a direct impact on us in terms of our oil imports. They get it from the Middle East. So, yeah.
Okay. Now, of course, the Namibian dollar and the 4 Namibian dollar, respectively, is no small amount. Now, perhaps, how could transporters be affected, especially those who, we're talking about taxis, and yes, of course, personal transport as well, but taxis, especially for those who have to take cab and dig deeper into their pockets. How perhaps, could we expect, perhaps, should we anticipate the price of taxi to go up anytime soon, or perhaps the government will also come in to question us on that aspect?
Look, the government has already moved to reduce or to make sure that the increase does not go beyond certain level.
Yeah.
So that is the first move. And even now, from the transport side of things, the $2 and the $4 is still such a big one. But their move has to be approved by government, because, look, at this particular juncture now, we all have to come together and understand. If the taxi cannot be so selfish and to say we are so increasing, and this is very, very important for everybody to understand. When things like these changes or happen, they are mostly external. We have no control over it.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody, whatever you decide to do, whether you're a transporter or you're a taxi driver, you cannot just be thinking at your own and say, no, we need to increase because fuel has gone up. The type of fuel we are talking about is affecting everybody. Production cost at Namib Mill, production cost at NamPower, because NamPower also imported diesel. Production cost at the farmers because they use diesel to run their machine. Everybody is affected by fuel because our farmers cannot afford electricity. Most of them, they use diesel. So the food which is coming from the farm is already factored in the increase in fuel. So meaning that every Namibian, so you as a taxi driver cannot just be there selfish, no, fuel is high, increase. No, everyone is affected by this, because when the truck of whatever coming from South Africa is factoring in the cost of fuel, and everyone is feeling that pinch. So there is nobody who is to say they are feeling it more than the other body. It's just that for you it's direct, for me it's not direct. But so we can expect the transport side of guys to start demanding the fee to go up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just to caution that if any of the sector becomes so selfish and started to increase, we are going to have an avalanche, because everyone is going to start to increase to say, I'm affected.
Exactly.
So we have really, really to be very, very careful in how we handle things. And I'm glad the government is the one that they give the green light to increase or not to increase.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
transport-wise, NAPTA, right?
Yeah, transport-wise, because they are the first one to benefit from the cushion. They are the first one to benefit. But you and me, who is going to buy a butternut produced with a diesel, thing? Am I not? So everybody's feeling the pinch. So we just have to be careful, not for us to be so selfish that I'm affected more by the price of fuel than the other. Everyone is literally affected, because Namibia is an importing country.
Mm-hmm.
The agriculture sector depends on diesel. So we are all equally affected by the change in fuel prices. And we are all feeling it one way or another. You are feeling it at the pump. I'm feeling that the cost of every product that is imported, is factoring in the changes in price. So nobody is actually protected from this change. So let us just be careful on that. And it's not bad to increase, to ask for the fee, for the transport fee to be increased. We just that we have to do it at the level which is not going to kill the other one, for us to protect the other one, because nobody is actually have been spared from this price. Everybody's feeling the price one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly, Nginomeno, I know you've written up a lot in terms of Angola refineries. I mean, you've spoken about Rakana, you've spoken about Angola. For Rakana in terms of hydroelectricity, but I have noticed that you've always been advocating for Namibia to actually boost Angola refineries, or perhaps even, is it what we call Lobito refineries, right? I think, yeah. If I'm right, yes. So, what about Lobito refineries now? Where do they come to play in this aspect? Should Namibia now open its eyes wider? I know that Namibia has become signatory to that alongside Botswana and, of course, another African country. What perhaps can be done at this particular point in time? I know also it's a time for African countries to awaken from their sleep. I don't want to say slumber per se, but yeah, as the Middle East now worsens and this now impacts us, what is the time for us to do as countries?
And that is actually one of the most important questions. Like, global events are shaping internal policies and domestic policies around the world.
Mm.
Countries are making moves. Like, if you look at Saudi Arabia, they have invested in a different pipe that they can pump oil to go differently. If you just look around, if you listen to Brazil, they are talking about biofuel. If you look, every country, if you looking at Russia, they are thinking of putting a ban in certain export. Countries are making domestic policies, not this type of decision of subsidy, no, production decisions that can actually cushion them in the future. And yeah, this is actually one of the pity things when I read and observe African leaders. They are not making decisions. They are, these global events are not forcing them to make decisions. And that is actually one of the most hurtful. I was waiting for Tadekulu, that the answer when he went there, to say, colleagues, one of the policy decisions that we are taking as a country to position ourselves, given the uncertainty involved, we are planning to invest in this and this.
Yeah.
That is what, you know, those are the type of moves I was
expecting
to hear from the policymaker, that, okay, cabinet has met, and we have decided we are going to look to the option that Angola gave us. But none of that came. And that is why now that it's very, very, very disappointing and actually scary that we have global events that are happening and shaping global supply chain and value chain and production and things like that. But us here internally, we are not making such a decision to secure our economy. We are actually saying, no, we are going to subsidize. For how long are we going to subsidize? You are broke. You're already going to borrow around 12, 15 billion already. So that is where now it gets scary, because there are no decisions that are being made to change the direction at the economic level. We are making petty decisions. We are not making medium-term to long-term decisions that can actually position us very well. So then, that now brings us to the Angolan conversation. And I was reading last week that Angola has now offered Botswana 30% in the Lobito. Now imagine if Botswana take that deal, and we didn't.
And which was offered to Namibia prior, is not
it? It was offered, yeah. It was offered to Namibia prior, Namibia and Zambia. But our cabinet, and this is actually the most scary thing, that the thinking of, I don't want to insult my leaders, I'm just saying, there is some questionable behavior or decision-making from our cabinet,
yeah,
especially at the economic level. We make decisions everywhere, funny decisions, celebrating independence in every constituency. Okay, beautiful.
Yeah. Hold that thought, Gabriel. Hold that thought for me. We'll be back shortly from a commercial break.
Phew, what a day. Finally on my way home. And hey, the taxi's empty. So much room. Oh no, why is this big guy getting in and sitting on top of me? No, not the member with the big bag too. Now I'm squeezed.
Sometimes in life, you just get squeezed. But luckily, with Express Credit's term loans, you can get up to 32,000 Namibian dollars to help ease your financial squeeze in under 15 minutes.
Ah, now that's a relief.
Visit expresscredit.com.na. Express Credit, money when you need it.
Easter's cheaper with extra low prices at Furman Brock. Get 2 kg Tastic Rice for $36.99. A 2 litre Coca-Cola for only $21.99. 2 kg Sunlight Hand or Auto Washing Powder for $54.99. And 9 Twin Saver 2-ply Toilet Rolls for only $69.99. Hop on over to vurmanbrock.com to see more Easter bargains at WB. We care.
Okay, Gabriel, we are back. And you were giving a quite interesting point right there in terms of decisions made by our cabinet, perhaps maybe lacking a prospect of looking into the future or preparing for future events such as this.
Yeah, I implore, I'm asking everyone, I'm challenging everyone on what I'm saying. I want them to go on the website of the Ministry of Information or ICT and download all cabinet decisions. Then we can now evaluate that what is our cabinet deciding on, especially given global events that are affecting value chain and supply chain, where now relationships are based on if I like you or do I support you. I'm going to trade with you only if I like your leadership. Mm. If I don't, we're not going to send good to you.
Mm.
Look at what they are doing in Cuba now, or Cuba, however you pronounce it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have decided that we're not going to export fuel to Cuba. Now Cuba is unable to produce enough electricity. So these are the type of things that are supposed to scare our cabinet, that Namibia imports 50% of your electricity. You import 70% of your consumable. And if you have global power that are doing that to Cuba, that are doing that to Iran, you're supposed actually to be more scared because you are more vulnerable because you're an importer.
Yeah.
So every decision now you're supposed to be making is to secure enough supply in critical goods, especially electricity. We import electricity from 4 countries, more than 50% every month. What if now Namibia do not do something that the USA doesn't like? Then the USA tells Zambia, if you continue exporting electricity to Namibia, we are going not to give you this. Then Zambia say, there's nothing I can do.
Yeah.
Just like now, South Africa is supposed to go to the G7, and France was told that if South Africa is coming, we USA, we are not coming. Then France has to drop South Africa from the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, those events at the global arena supposed to shape the decision that we are making internally, especially economic-related decisions that can affect the production. But if you go now into those cabinet decisions, if you listen to your parliamentarian discussion, what are they discussing? They are just there pointing fingers and making noise and, you know.
Arguments in the
and arguments that are not shaping production. And that is actually the most scary part. Cabinet is just making decisions that are not supporting production. Parliament is sitting on critical laws that are supposed to boost the production. But you have all these global events happening and they are scary. And Namibia is very, very vulnerable because they're an importer. So now then you look at your leaders like there is a questionable something that their understanding of economic building is quite questionable. Their understanding of global matters and how they affect it is questionable. So that's why I'm saying that the Angolan decision will always going to bite us. And it might bite us even now if Botswana accepted the 30%.
Mm.
Because President Boko, remember, was in Angola just 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
If they accepted that 30%, we were in conversation with Botswana to build the storage. But if Botswana accepted the 30%, it means they are just looking out for themselves.
Mm.
Like now, Botswana is more vulnerable and they need something and they need it faster. And they might, if they accepted the 30%, we are now going to learn it the hardest way.
Yeah.
So, look, we have the resources. And something that I'm proud of Angola, the current president, is that he first went to his neighbor to say, colleagues, can we work together? And that's one of the most beautiful things that I had coming from Angola. And now, guess what, when the neighbors refuse, Angola now approached China for money to finish the little bit of refinery. Now, imagine if we could have made a decision a long time ago. That Lobito refinery could be at a certain level where it's about to be finalized. So we lack foresight. We lack a decision making. We are not in a hurry. And it's actually going to cost our economy because the decision making of those who are supposed to make decisions is where the problem is. We are not making decisions at the cabinet level and the parliament level. And that agency needs to be developed if we are to cushion ourselves from all these global negativities that are coming through.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's very sad. It's very, very sad.
Yeah, it's quite something to ponder on. But nonetheless, it's always good, even as a consumer, you understand where we're going and you get an understanding of what's being done so that you can also reason in such a manner that, oh, okay, this is why this and that is happening. But I know we always have to get that from economists. So Gabriel, thank you so much.
No, man, you're welcome, man. Thank you.
Okay. And of course, there we had it from Nginomero Valley Erastus, Gabriel, also just giving us an understanding of what is actually, of what was announced by the Minister of Mines and Energy. But nonetheless, we're still also going to get further into it as much as we broke it down. Let's now hear from RNJ Statler Management Consultations, that is John Statler, on his analysis of the fuel price shock. I will read what he says and then I'll get into explaining what that actually means in basic terminology. Now, a fuel price increase of $4 Namibian to $8 Namibian per liter would not be a routine adjustment. In the Namibian context, it would amount to a major cost shock. Fuel is a system-wide input into the economy, affecting transport, production, and household welfare. And there, Gabriel says that if the transport company or the transport sector is to come up and say, we're going to increase the price for transport fare as well, that will not actually be fair, especially on the production side and the household welfare level. And Namibia would feel such a shock acutely because transport accounts for a significant share of inflation and fuel costs feed into nearly all goods and services. And the impact would occur through three main channels. One, the inflationary impact. RNJ Statler says a sharp increase would immediately raise transport costs, followed by second round effects on food, retail goods and services. Now, this would likely push inflation well above current expectations. My explanation comes in to say the immediate rise in transport costs would affect both passenger and flight services as operators just adjust prices to remain viable. Once transport becomes more expensive, businesses across the supply chain, especially those involved in food distribution, retail and manufacturing, are forced to pass this higher cost on the consumers, right? And these are the second round effects typically take a short time to materialize, but can be more persistent, driving sustained inflation. Now, in Namibia, where many goods are transported over long distances or imported, and we import a lot, this effect becomes even more pronounced, amplifying price increases across the economy. Secondly, household income shocks. Now, ordinary citizens would face higher commuting costs, increased food prices, and reduced disposable income. The poorest households would be disproportionately affected. For most households, fuel price increases translate directly into a higher cost of living. Workers who rely on daily commuting, especially through taxis or buses, would immediately feel the strain. At the same time, rising food prices would further stretch already tight budgets. Now, as disposable items shrink, households are forced to prioritize essentials over cutting back on healthcare, education-related expenses, and other important needs. Now, lower-income households are particularly vulnerable because a large portion of their income is already spent on transport and food, leaving little room to absorb additional costs. Thirdly, competitiveness impacts. RNG state classes, key sectors such as agriculture, mining, tourism, and trade would face rising logistic costs, reducing margins and showing economic activity. Now, fuel is a critical input in production and distribution process. In agriculture, higher fuel prices increase the cost of operating machinery and transporting goods to market. In mining, which is highly energy intensive, operational costs rise significantly, potentially affecting output and profitability. Now, tourism operators may face increased costs for transport and services, making Namibia a more expensive destination. Now, across trade and logistics, higher fuel costs reduce efficiency and raise the cost of doing business. As margins shrink, businesses may delay expansion, reduce hiring, or pass costs on to consumers, ultimately showing economic activity or slowing economic activity. Now, the macroeconomic effects, the economy would likely experience high inflation, reduced consumption, and slower growth. Monetary policy may face constraints in balancing inflation and growth. This will have an impact on citizens of higher education, which could result in higher education and transport costs. By education, just means sort of to say, even the transport of taking the kids to school, in terms of taking them to school now to get their education, reduce purchasing power, pressure on small businesses, and greater rural vulnerability. So there's quite a lot that is happening with this. There's a need for structural reforms by accelerating rail and logistics improvements to reduce reliance on food transport, that is from RNG, also market oversight to prevent unjustified price increases and ensure transparency, protect transport and food supply chains by ensuring affordability of commuting and essential goods, phased adjustments, which is to spread increases over time to reduce the shock, and again, targeted relief, support vulnerable households and public transport rather than broad subsidies. Of course, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. Remember, you can also partake in the news analysis. 083-288-401 is the number in studio. Let's pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back shortly. Stay tuned.
Lipura nenge no wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku dite opoye ekukulile oshafafana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuana onongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwata fano na Monica ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ileko berewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel...
Efiloshisho utali kulandula kona avewa yuka. Ekwashilipalekolo maruendo paiwano kupitila mo NHB. Watukwa teleko meshwe kwashilipalekolo afika mafio pedola emilio na omlongo danamibia. Moshi joshe tukeshe kuyanja oma kwa fo unamiti enashane filoshisho lopa ulumo mumbu. Kwa avoveli ponje yoshilongo, shijoshi topor washo ijo yetu, tashiningwa inapawe danando ishoshe layash. Opo umone ya kulolo polis maule ominute disyonailela, lishangifako nhp.com.na omanga ino ya moruendo. Ponjeo Shilong. E mangono malandula fano o dodino kulandurwa. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion.
Welcome back. And now at this juncture, let's get into news beyond the borders of Namibia. Mr. in South Africa, we are also talking about a fuel price hike and is calling for fuel levy cuts in order to cushion the blow.
Now, fuel prices don't just affect motorists. They affect everything, from the transport of raw materials to manufacturing to getting goods onto shelves. Every step in the supply chain becomes more expensive, and ultimately consumers pay the price. That's why economists are warning that fuel inflation will push up the cost of living. So what can government do to bring temporary relief to consumers? There are several main factors to take into account, starting with what goes into the fuel price. Now, in 2022, government cut the fuel levy by 1 rand 50 cents per litre, to ease pressure during the Russia-Ukraine crisis. Now, there are calls for a similar intervention as a way to bring prices down. In his budget speech last month, Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana announced that the general fuel levy will go up by 9 cents per litre for petrol and 8 cents per litre for diesel. The Road Accident Fund levy will increase by 7 cents per litre. The carbon fuel levy will go up by 5 cents per litre for petrol and 6 cents for diesel. Now, some sectors of society have argued that the fastest and most effective solution is to cut the fuel levy again, warning that rising fuel costs will cascade through the economy. But the challenge, however, is that these interventions come at a cost. Globally, governments spent nearly $900 billion cushioning consumers during the last energy crisis. Another consideration is that broad subsidies may bring short-term relief, but that can strain public finances.
Meanwhile, Cape Town consumers switch to trains in order to reduce costs.
Sharmil Peterson is a fruit and vegetable vendor located in the Cape Town Station precinct. He is worried that people will have to choose between transport costs and buying his produce.
It's going to be a huge impact because we need to get to the markets as well. So it's going to cripple the business as well because people need to get to work. So they're going to have to decide to use itinerary maybe for ever, for example, or for their petrol to get to work or get to home or to go somewhere with their family. So it's going to be a big thing as well for our business as well. Yeah.
Across the way, a fellow food vendor says they had to increase prices recently. He notices that more people are using trains as the cost of living increases.
My concern when it comes to petrol thing, yeah, it's like, it's a lot like easily mass, let me put it in that way. I don't know, like, because of we use cars to stock, so when we stock, you see, we put more petrol, like more than before. So that's why we're even increasing prices, as you can see. So we're trying to balance things.
Commuters are looking for cheaper ways to travel in order to make ends meet.
I sold my car, bought a motorcycle because it's one-third the price of petrol. But currently, it's, you know, they're almost matching. You know, I mean, the price is astronomical. It's concerning because we can't survive. Our kids need to get to school. That costs petrol. You know, to do anything, it costs petrol, you know, and or diesel.
Bus commuters say they will most likely also have to fork out more on getting to and from work.
If the petrol is going up, then the maestro fees is also a monthly is 1,000 rand. And a weekly is 350, so everybody can't, even if you pay weekly, if you load weekly cards, it's not keeping you for the whole week. It's affecting us. It's affecting the economy. It's gonna have a huge impact on us because every time everything is going up, but the salaries is not going up.
Thabo Motsoko travels by train between Strand and Cape Town. He says taking the train, for him, is a more affordable public transport option. A return ticket between Cape Town and Strand costs Motsoko 28 rand. Praza has meanwhile confirmed that fares will not increase in April. It's urged commuters to make use of the train services.
For a 20-kilometer ride with Praza, you are paying 10 rand. Between 21 kilometers, 40 kilometers is 12 rand, and anything above 40 kilometers is 14 rand per ride. That is as if you are buying a single ticket on your daily commute. But if you then want to save and really, really let your rent go to other things other than transport, we are encouraging that you buy a monthly ticket. And this monthly ticket is discounted heavily up until 40% discount that you can get. So South Africans, as the purse pinch, we at Prasa are saying we are available to assist you in your commute.
The increased fuel prices come into effect on Wednesday. Vanessa Puna, SABC News, Cape Town.
Meanwhile, Kasasemeya slams IOC chief over Olympic ban on transgender women.
The South African Olympic champion Caster Semenya has sharply criticized International Olympic Committee President Kirsty Coventry after the IOC approved new rules that bar transgender women from competing in women's events at the Games.
For me personally, I'll say that the voice is not heard because you're taking it as a tick box. You're ticking the box so you can go clarify or say, yes, we've consulted. For me, it's for you ticking the box. Personally, for her as a leader, she's an African. I'm sure she understands, you know, how, you know, we as Africans, we're coming from. As a global south, you know, and you cannot control, you know, genetics. For me, personally, for her being a woman coming from Africa, knowing how, you know, African women or women in the global south are affected by that.
The policy, agreed on Thursday and set to apply ahead of the 2028 Los Angeles Olympics, also tightens eligibility for athletes with a difference in sex development, including Semenya herself.
Of course, it causes a harm, you know, bodily, I'll say. And for him, obviously, if you say the science, because we talk about science here, yeah? If the science is clear, show us who decided, and don't dress that as a lie, because it's a lie, and we know because we've seen it. So if we were to answer or confront Kirsty, that's how we're going to respond, and we'll respond strong as we are, because it affects women.
The debate over fairness, inclusion, and the definition of the women's category in elite sport is now set to intensify as both transgender athletes and women with differences in sex development face fresh barriers to competing at the Olympic Games.
Meanwhile, Nigeria's refinery faces increased regional demand for oil amid the U.S.-Israeli war.
Sprawling across 2,600 hectares, the Dangote refinery was built to help end Nigeria's reliance on imported fuel. But today, this 650,000 barrel per day giant is being asked to do much more. Shipping disruptions caused by the war in Iran have throttled nearly a fifth of the world's energy flow. With Middle Eastern supplies diverted or delayed, Africa is feeling the squeeze and looking for a lifeline closer to home.
The demand is so high, I can tell you for nothing. Today, we have almost sold out our jet. We have almost sold out our gas oil. What we have just, is just the gasoline, which is the PMS. We call it, petroleum motor spirit. That's the only one that we have in excess.
Every day, the facility pumps out 75 million liters of petrol, 25 million liters of diesel, and 20 million liters of aviation fuel. But African countries aren't the only ones.
Well, let's shift our focus.
Europe, Asia, and South America are also bidding for the cargoes, turning a regional solution into a global prize. The Dangote refinery here in Lekki has become a vital strategic shield for Nigeria and many other countries. The 650,000 barrel a day facility provides steady supply of fuel as international markets grapple with depleted inventories. But as Nigeria's crude supply to the company ran low, it's forced to buy from outside sources, which means a long war could make it difficult for Dangote to operate. To prevent that, economists say the Nigerian government should prioritize domestic supply over crude export, as a crisis could create more chaos.
One of the options that can be explored is that the federal government of Nigeria agrees to sell at a particular price crude to the Dangote refinery, with the assurance that the price of refined products does not increase. As a matter of fact, it comes down.
The timing is a double-edged sword. While Nigeria benchmarked its 2026 budget at $69 a barrel, prices have now rocketed past $100. It should be a windfall, but there is a catch. Low domestic crude production means the refinery is often starved of the very oil sitting beneath Nigerian soil, forcing the plant to look abroad for raw materials. Still, the refinery sees opportunity in what's happening around the world today. The operator wants to double output.
I can tell you that we are going to really take people for a very, very big surprise. Within 30 months, our refinery will be the largest refinery ever in the world.
For now, the race is on to see if African production can outrun a global energy crisis caused by the U.S.-Israel war on Iran. Ahmed Idris, Al Jazeera, Lekki, Lagos.
Meanwhile, customs bonds shape Africa's trade future.
Now, a new financial instrument called customs bonds are now reshaping Africa's trade future. For example, the Africa Export Imbank now provides comprehensive custom bond facilities through its African Collaborative Transit Guarantee Scheme in order to facilitate cross-border trade. Now, these bonds cover customs duties, transit fees, and also container deposits. They help to reduce costs and also border delays. Now, this formed a part of the conversation I had with Gainmore Zanamwe, the Trade Facilitation Director of Afreximbank.
More than 21 countries, central banks have now actually joined the system, and we've got more than 61 commercial banks that we are working with, and I'm glad Kenya has been one of the key advocates. In particular, your president has been a key champion of the Pan-African Payment and Settlement System, which is going to actually lead to cost savings of up to about $5 billion a year in transaction costs. Mm-hmm. So it will allow us to be able to trade in local currencies, and that will actually enable the AFCFTA to work. Of course, the payment system will also support the initiative that I was talking about, the transit guarantee. Right. It will enable even the premiums and the claims to be paid in local currencies. Mm-hmm. And we've also built in other things under the ATG, including under MANSA, which will allow us to be able to do KYC and due diligence to know some of the key players that we'll be dealing with in trade in Africa.
And the, I'm curious because these seem to be initiatives that were recently launched. I wonder if you can give us some insight into how effective they've been so far. Talking about the bond, the digital platform PAPS, as you talked about. When you look at the track record, what have they been able to achieve so far?
So I'll start with the transit bond. And that initiative, when Afreximbank came in, we actually gave a capacity initially of about 300 million just to the EAC. Okay. And the EAC countries that are implementing it. Last year alone, we actually managed to issue bonds of more than 185 million just within a very short period of time, which we're almost calling a pilot. Okay. But now that it has been proven and tested, and we've now also done some innovations and improvements under the EAC transit bonds, we actually expect to double some of those numbers and to support the effective movement of goods. And on the ATG, especially on PAPS, when we started, we had a few countries. But now I'm happy that about 21 countries have actually been onboarded. And trade is actually happening. If you look at some of the transactions that have taken place between Ghana, Nigeria. So it actually shows that the system is working to facilitate trade in our own local currencies without having to resort to any outside currencies. So that has actually been very useful also in terms of building the efficiency in trade, but also in ensuring that some of the trade that could not take place because we're waiting for hard currency is actually now taking place. There's also been an issue of currencies. Some companies, I will probably not mention names, but some big companies had their money stuck in other countries. They could not repatriate it. Mm-hmm. But through the Pan-African payment marketplace system, we've been able to actually facilitate the repatriation of those currencies to the home or basically headquarters of those companies that are involved.
Now, these are certainly interesting initiatives to advance the idea of new and innovative ways to mobilize financing and also regional integration. Now, you said you were at the Kenya International Investment Conference, and I'm curious to know what the discussion is around, especially the role that Afreximbank is going to play going forward, especially amid this current global trade landscape, where geopolitical tension is sort of driving where trade goes.
It's a very good question. So I would want to start by saying Afreximbank is no stranger to Kenya, and we have been working very well with Kenya. And I would like to go back to 2023, where we actually worked with Kenya to organize the investment forum. And when we did that, we also gave some recommendations for Kenya to make some improvements and focus on investment projects, deals that can actually be taken to the banks. And I'm happy with what we've seen now. Kenya, Invest Kenya actually did exactly that. They managed to put together a very good and solid deal book of investment projects that they showcased to investors. And we have been working with them now to ensure that those investment deals are actually taken to the next stage. We've actually offered them a various range of our facilities, which will actually help them to take the projects to the next stage. Some of the projects are at feasibility. Some will require more preparation to become bankable. So we actually offered them the project preparation facility, which will enable them to prepare these documents to bankability to ensure that they can access debt and equity to ensure that they are executed.
China's currency is rapidly gaining ground in global finance.
Now, a new report from Standard Chartered says that China's renminbi is rapidly gaining ground in global finance. Titled Renminbi in Motion, that a study shows that despite China's dominance in world trade, its currency has lagged until now. It also adds that better payment systems such as the CIPS and growing offshore liquidity are now making renminbi deals even more cheaper, faster, and lower risk for businesses worldwide. Now, according to that report, adoption is surging from supply chains in Africa and ASEAN countries to capital markets in Europe. Let's find out more about that report from Birju Shangrajka. He is the managing director at Standard Chartered Bank right here in Kenya. So great to have you with us on the show today. Now, of course, let's start off with the fact that the world we live in today is one where geopolitics is now reshaping the trade and investment landscape. What are your thoughts on how this changing landscape could accelerate the adoption of the renminbi going forward?
So, well, thank you, and thanks for having me on the show. I think, you know, if we look at the report that Standard Chartered published, the one you just mentioned, Renminbi in Motion, we polled 300 corporates globally, including in Africa, just to get their sense. And we're already seeing some very interesting statistics here. We're seeing, you know, 23%, as per the report, 23% of revenues and approximately 25% of costs are already renminbi denominated on these clients, you know, balance sheets and P&Ls. But only roughly about 14% is financed in renminbi. So you know, we're seeing an interesting dynamic where there is a mismatch between revenues on balance sheets sitting in and costs sitting in renminbi, but financing still in other currencies. Now, that's not to say that nobody's doing anything about it. So we've seen sort of renminbi move from a policy-driven growth, internationalization, to a structural phase. And what do I mean by that? We're seeing increased trade flows, renminbi-denominated supply chains, as we just mentioned, and investment linkages as well. So, you know, China remains the leading trading partner for most of Africa, 120 countries globally, and Kenya is no different. I think as the world resets into a multipolar world, the global partnerships are going to become more and more important. This is where, you know, countries like Kenya that straddle the East and the West and Standard Chartered that straddle the East and the West can play a very important role.
Quite right. And it's interesting. The report says that, in quotes, currency strategy will become central to resilience going forward, liquidity and also risk management. Do you see a multipolar reserve currency environment going forward? Or could we be heading towards maybe a world where China's renminbi replaces the dollar as a reserve currency?
So at Standard Chartered, we don't take the view of the renminbi being an alternative currency. We see it as a equal a currency that sits alongside the US dollar, euro, not outside the system. Now, you know, China accounts for 15% of global trade, and we will continue to see the renminbi growing. In terms of being a reserve currency, we're starting to see the shift, and it's not going to happen overnight. It's slow burn, but it will happen. And let me give you an example. Kenya has denominated some of its dollar debt that was you know, into renminbi. It's publicized, and that sort of helps them. Eventually, they should have a renminbi reserve base to service that debt. What you started right at the top of this discussion, SIPs, the swaps that are in place right now, make this a very different approach to renminbi internationalization than it was before. The plumbing is there, as we'd like to see it. So, in summary, I think renminbi, will sit alongside the dollar and euro, and we don't see you know, the dollar or the renminbi becoming dominant. It'll become a multipolar world where customers will choose what works best for them.
Now, as you said, the plumbing is there. And looking at the report, you said that 24% of corporates that you surveyed, they anticipate increased renminbi onshore and offshore financing in the medium term. But I'd like to get more insight into what exactly you're seeing in terms of them actually accelerating their adoption.
So, you know, we talk about challenges, and at Standard Chartered, we started looking at this, you know, in the mid-2000s, 2010, sorry, and initially tackled it saying, like, can we redominate invoices that are there for imports from China into renminbi? But what we found is there was generally a lack of familiarity with policy. There was inability to cross between local currency and renminbi without having to cross the dollar in between. And generally there was corporate inertia. I mean, if it worked, why, if it's not broken, why fix it? But this is different. This is different now. I mean, we're 12 years down the road. The liquidity pools are far better. Though in Africa, they still need to grow, but the offshore liquidity pools are growing. There's almost $1 trillion of renminbi sitting in Hong Kong. And it's looking for a home. So we still believe this is different now. The plumbing's in place, but it's going to take a little bit of, effort from both, governments and players like Standard Chartered to.
Meanwhile, President Donald Trump says he's considering seizing Iran's Kohang Island.
Welcome, I'm Martine Croxall. U.S. President Donald Trump says that he could take the oil in Iran and seize Kohang Island, the small island off the coast of Iran, home to a major oil terminal that is considered the country's economic lifeline. Speaking to the Financial Times, Mr. Trump said the U.S. could take the island very easily. Well, the president's comments come as a further 3,500 U.S. troops arrived in the Middle East as fears grow that further escalation could expose American forces to Iranian attacks. Speaking to reporters on board Air Force One, Mr. Trump claimed the U.S.-Israel war has already achieved regime change in Iran, while insisting he would still make a deal with Tehran.
I think we'll make a deal with them, pretty sure. But it's possible we won't. But we've had regime change, if you look, already, because the one regime was decimated, destroyed. They're all dead. The next regime is mostly dead. And the third regime, we're dealing with different people than anybody's dealt with before. It's a whole different group of people. So I would consider that regime change. And frankly, they've been very reasonable. So I think we've had regime change. You can't do much better than that.
Well, the Wall Street Journal is reporting that President Trump is considering a military operation aimed at extracting 1,000 pounds of uranium from Iran. The paper cites unnamed security officials and says the operation would likely put American forces inside the country for days or longer. Meanwhile, Israel's prime minister has ordered the military to move further into southern Lebanon. Benjamin Netanyahu said the expansion of what he called a security buffer zone would neutralize the threat from Hezbollah. Joe Inwood reports.
For a military that the U.S. claims to have destroyed, Iran still seems capable of inflicting damage. In the Negev Desert, an industrial park burns, the result of Iranian missile strikes on Israel. There have been reports of dozens of drones and missiles fired across the Gulf. It has also emerged that a valuable U.S. spy plane, called an AWACS, was destroyed in a strike on an airbase in Saudi Arabia. This war does not feel like it's de-escalating. There are reports in the U.S. that the use of ground troops is being considered. Thousands of Marines are in the region. It's been speculated they may attempt to capture Kohang Island, where most of Iran's oil is exported, something the U.S. president has not dismissed. Last night, Donald Trump told the Financial Times, "To be honest with you, my favorite thing is to take the oil in Iran, but some stupid people back in the U.S. say, why are you doing that? But those are stupid people. Maybe we take Kohang Island," he said. "Maybe we don't. We have a lot of options." When asked about the state of Iranian defense on the island, he said, "I don't think they have any defense. We could take it very easily." But that's not an assessment many agree with. Any operation to put U.S. boots on the ground would come with risk, both for the personnel involved and for the escalation of this war.
Aggression and occupation will yield no result other than the humiliating capture, dismemberment, and disappearance of the aggressors. American commanders and soldiers will become food for the sharks of the Persian Gulf.
This is now a multi-front war. In Lebanon, Israel has continued its offensive. The IDF released this footage of their operations in the south. Their target is the armed group Hezbollah, allies of Iran. But that seems to include some journalists. Yesterday, the funerals of Ali Shoaib, Fatima Fatouni and her brother Mohammed took place. Israel accused Shoaib, who worked for a channel aligned with Hezbollah, of being an intelligence operative, without providing any evidence. The Lebanese authorities say more than 1,000 civilians have now been killed, with more than 1 million forced from their homes. There are fears some may not be able to return, after Israel's Prime Minister expanded what he calls a security zone, but others will call an occupation.
I said we would change the face of the Middle East, and we did it. In Lebanon, I've instructed the military to expand the existing security strip in order to finally thwart the threat of invasion and to keep missile fire away from our borders.
These were the skies over Tehran last night. Iranian air defences still apparently in action. Iran will know it cannot defeat the US and Israel militarily, but may not need to if it can outlast them. Joe Inwood, BBC News.
Let's speak to our correspondent, James Waterhouse, and the news, James, that Karg Island could be within President Trump's sights.
That's right. I mean, in an interview with the Financial Times, Donald Trump said that he wants to take the oil, but some, in his words, stupid people in the US say I shouldn't. I think that's a reflection of his ambition, and we are getting a flurry of briefings from the US side on what is on the table for the US president. We know thousands of US troops are heading there, special forces, paratroopers. These are personnel trained in taking territory and trying to keep hold of it. And on paper, it is likely that the US could use Karg Island as leverage. It is how Iran exports most of its oil, because this war for the Americans is increasingly becoming about how the Strait of Hormuz is controlled. But it's one thing to take this island. It's quite another to keep hold of it. When you consider the threats from the Iranians, the fact that the Iranian coastline is extremely mountainous, you would imagine US troops would be pretty exposed to.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Degi program. And from Indafa Happy Juju, it is goodbye.